Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see.
Produced
some
at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Prison Pipeline. I'm Doug McVeigh. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal legal system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. We seek to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safe, healthy, and just society. Global Prison Trends 2025 is the 11th edition of the flagship annual publication by Penal Reform International and the Thailand Institute of Justice. This report provides a data-driven, evidence-based analysis of key developments in prison systems and criminal legal systems worldwide. The 2025 report offers an in-depth analysis on prisoners' voting rights and reveals new data on enduring problems in prisons, including increasing rates of suicide and violence and inadequate health care provision. The report examines emerging and often overlooked issues, such as the environmental impact of prison infrastructure and the growing role of technology in prisons. The report also marks the 15th anniversary of the UN Bangkok rules, highlighting limited progress and ongoing concerns over the rising imprisonment of women and the need for gender-responsive, community-based alternatives. Global Prison Trends 2025 was launched May 22nd at an event held alongside the 34th session of the United Nations Commission on Crime Prevention and Criminal Justice. On this week's edition of Prison Pipeline, we're going to hear presentations by some of the speakers at that event. First, here's Olivia Rope, Executive Director of Penal Reform International.
So this report is the 11th edition, and reflecting on it over the last few days as I prepared for today, I thought there's many kind of long-standing issues that we continue to document with new data, with new statistics, with new examples, but there's also a lot of new trends, including, of course, green prisons, for example. So I'll try and take you through briefly some of the key things in this presentation. I don't have access to the slides, so I'll just say slide if that's okay. Thank you. So first of all, the world's prison population has reached an estimated 11.5 million people. This is the highest figure recorded to date. And while the global population growth explains part of this trend, the disproportionate growth of imprisonment in certain regions definitely tells a deeper story. So since 2000, in South America, prison populations have soared by over 220%, 85% growth in Oceania, and 53% growth in Africa. And even in Europe, where Russia's sharp reduction since 2000 has led to the European figures showing a decline. If you exclude Russia, there's actually been an increase of 12% in the region. We think that this growth also reflects broader patterns of criminalization, inequality, and the failure to invest properly in alternative measures. And perhaps the most immediate manifestation of this trend is, of course, the prison overcrowding that you will see in many, many prison systems globally. In fact, at least 120 prison systems operate above their capacity, and in over 20% of this, the rates exceed double the intended limits. In response, we see many governments are reaching for the same solution, which is to build more capacity, build their way out of the problem. So from Honduras to South Africa to Western Australia to the UK, many, many countries are announcing or are undertaking prison construction as a way out of their overcrowding crisis. But history and all the evidence shows that this does not work, and it just creates capacity to put more people in prison. Next slide, please. So one in three people are in pretrial detention. This is a very stable rate. Unfortunately, it hasn't shifted. And of course, I should point out that these people are still presumed innocent, and in some cases, spend years and years waiting for trial. In Africa and South Asia, for example, pre-trial detention often exceeds 50% of the total prison population amid underfunded courts, inflexible laws, and risk-averse decision-making, and criminalization of poverty. The consequences are really devastating, and we witness that in many pre-trial detainee facilities where conditions are worse than for people who have been convicted. This year's report also highlights the systemic racial and ethnic inequalities embedded in many justice systems. Indigenous peoples, foreign nationals, ethnic minorities tend to face higher rates of arrest, conviction, harsher treatment, and this really fuels cycles of exclusion and is really a crisis of our time. Next slide, please. I will leave Shanti, my dear colleague from the TIJ, to go into the data around women. But just to mention that there are now 730,000 women, as reported at the beginning of 2025, in prison globally. And there are an estimated 250,000 children detained, also globally. Although this is very much an estimate, there are a lot of issues with data collection when it comes to children. Another trend that we detail in each edition of Global Prison Trends is the use of extreme sentences. So life imprisonment is on the rise. There's at least 500,000 people serving life, whether it's informal life, de facto life, or formal life imprisonment sentences. And that comes with their own set of challenges, including harsh prison regimes and this concern around the right to hope and the right to have some chance to be released one day. This brings me to the question of the death penalty. It is an issue that we consistently say that is not adequately addressed by this commission, disappointingly. So in 2024, a record 130 countries supported the UN General Assembly resolution calling for a moratorium on the death penalty, which was a big win. And new abolitionist measures have been introduced in many countries, from Zimbabwe, Zambia, and there's also been commutations in the US by Biden, for example, and Malaysia. But against this tide, our partners at Amnesty International and Harm Reduction International have tracked a sharp rise in executions among the states who do retain the sentence. So over 1,500 people were executed in 2024, which is the highest figure since 2015. And of concern is that nearly 40% of all these known executions were for drug-related offences. Using capital punishment as part of drug enforcement strategies is in spite of all the overwhelming evidence that this has no deterrent effect and violates human rights standards. Many people on death row also spend years or decades in isolation with minimal human contact, and the severe mental health impacts are increasingly documented. Next slide, please. Carrying on around drug policies, which was discussed yesterday at the Global Commission on Drug Policy, and I'm pleased that a global commissioner is here. Welcome. This remains a central theme in discussing the imprisonment rates and prison crisis that we see. So 2.5 million people are estimated to be in prison for drug-related offences, and 500,000 are jailed just for possession. But we have signs of progress. At least 66 countries have adopted some form of decriminalisation, which is really adopting this health-based, human rights-based, effective approach. We have seen some pardons and sentence commutations in, for example, in Morocco, for people convicted of drug-related offence, showing a trend towards more progressive policies. Alongside sentencing reform and decriminalisation, another pathway out of this over-reliance on prison is, of course, the use of non-custodial sanctions. A new estimate that was published earlier this year in the Routledge Handbook estimated that over 12.5 million people, so 1 million more people than in prison, are currently under community-based sanctions. But the use of these alternatives is uneven. So in the Global South, South America, Africa, and parts of Asia, prison is still used far more than alternatives, particularly if you look at pre-trial measures. And in Europe and North America, meanwhile, there are more people serving alternatives than a prison sentence. But both stories come with their challenges. So barriers towards more alternatives in the Global South are to do with insufficient resources, a lack of political will, sometimes pointing to a lack of public support, and a lack of institutional capacity. But where there are more people serving alternatives, we have a different challenge, which is the net widening, drawing more and more people into the criminal justice system, often with unnecessarily harsh conditions and high rates of breach, ending in back-end admissions to prison. Next slide. That was another presentation from yesterday. Anyway, I will carry on if we don't. Is there another slide? No, this is another presentation, sorry. It's okay. It's fine. I can do the rest without the slides. So when we're looking at what's happening inside prisons, the evidence shows that in many countries, violence among staff and peer-to-peer violence among prisoners is not necessarily decreasing. There's a lot of ongoing issues, including overcrowding, staff shortages faced in many, many systems, including across Europe, for example, corruption, and the growing influence of organized criminal networks, which has been a topic here at the CCPC Day. In regions affected by armed conflict, as we see more and more wars affecting people in prison globally, we see that structural weaknesses and bad infrastructure in prisons, in conflict-affected settings, are leading to widespread human rights violations. And over the last 2 years, there has been a whole myriad of different reports published by different entities, including the UN, showing horrendous torture, ill treatment, sexual violence, arbitrary detention of millions of people that are in deprivation of liberty in conflict-affected states. I'm conscious of the time, so I will just highlight one last issue that we have covered in this year's report, which is voting rights of people in prison. So last year was called the mega election year, of course, and over 4.3 billion people globally participated in national elections. So we were interested to look at what happened in prisons. And in many of these elections, unfortunately, people in prison were excluded from voting. So imprisonment, if you were in prison, it remains one of the most common grounds for exclusion from your voting rights. And on page 31 of the report, we map out recent elections and the kind of legal status, and where we could find the data, we added that in of how many people were able to vote as reported. So some countries impose blanket bans on anyone who is in prison, or perhaps anyone who has a conviction. But more common is that there are some restrictions on the right to vote based on the type of offence or sentence length or pre-trial status. But even where laws did allow people in prison to vote, there were many logistical and administrative issues faced to get people to vote. So this varied from lack of information, registration delays, lack of paperwork, and just absence of polling infrastructure in prisons. There needs to be an effort made. So this we see as an issue that deserves some more attention, so that people in prison, the 11.5 million people in prison, can participate in public life.
That was Olivia Rope, Executive Director of Penal Reform International, speaking May 22nd at the launch of the 11th edition of PRI's flagship annual publication, Global Prison Trends 2025. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Prison Pipeline. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Now let's hear more from that panel at the launch of Global Prison Trends 2025. Chani Chirenara is Director of the Office for the Bangkok Rules and Treatment of Offenders at the Thailand Institute of Justice.
First of all, we're really happy to be able to work with PRI on this important initiative of the Global Prison Trend Report. We have been working together since 2017, and this year the Global Prison Trends Report came at the time that are important for the GIJ as we celebrate the 15th anniversaries of the adoptions of the Bangkok Rules. So I will go through some of the key highlights that came up in the report, as well as others, the series of work that we have been doing through the course of this year and last year, as we prepare to push forward the agenda around women's in prison. So if we look at the report that in front of you, we see that in the past decades, we have seen the continuous increasing in the female prison populations. So women account for about 6.8% of the total prison populations, 11.5 millions. But if you look at the growing populations compared to men, in the past decades, with female prison populations had increased by 57% as compared to only 22% of their male counterpart. And this trend has been a long-standing trend even before the Bangkok Rule was adopted. Mm-hmm. And even the rules calling for more use of non-custodial measures, but we've seen in the past decade that the use of imprisonment is still used heavily for women. And the report also highlight that one third of women were in prison for a pre-trial detentions, reflecting on the still a limited use of the non-custodial measure. So when we put women in prison, the effect is not only on the women themselves, but also the children of the women as well. The impact of imprisonment noted in the report also include that approximately 19,000 children were also severely impacted by their mother involvement in the criminal justice. So I think this number gives us some thinking of, you know, in Thailand, we often pay attention also to this group of children, and we sometimes call them invisible victims, because their living conditions were not get sufficient attention. And the Global Prison Trend Report also highlights some of the key factors that lead to prison overcrowding and the overuse of prison sentence for women. One particular report that I was really excited about and to read more about it and focus on the poverties and punishment, which highlight that the increase in the criminalizations of poverty-related acts. Around the world, you've seen that women were imprisoned for non-violent crime related to, for example, property crime, shoplifting. These acts would be better addressed through the diversion or the use of non-custodial or community-based measure and sanction. But we still see this increasing, you know, of the use of imprisonment for this type of crime. And also the drug policy that impact the rising in the female prison populations in many countries and regions. In Southeast Asia, where we are based, for example, over 75% of women are in prison for drug-related offense, And sometimes, and most of the time, it's a small drug-related crime, such as having drug in possession in the quantity that beyond what the law say. The report also draw interesting finding from the UNODC survey of 62 jurisdictions that highlighting that only half of the jurisdiction during participate in the survey have a gender responsive approach in their rehabilitation. So if you look at the rehabilitation program are sometimes still lacking the gender responsive approach, or some, for instance, the work in prison are sometimes related to the gender stereotypes and not sufficient access to a rehabilitation program for women. Another initiative that I would like to inform you is the work that we have been doing with together with UNODC, with support from PRI and also our partner Ilanut, is the project that we call Renewing Our Promises, Fostering Progress and Investment to Advance Applications of the Bangkok Rule. We have been doing this project since 2024. The aim is to gather inputs and findings on the people who are implementing the Bangkok rules on the ground and see what are some of the promising practices and what are challenges that they face and what would be the priority as we go forward. So we did this in The Hague, in the Netherlands, focusing on the use of non-custodial measure. Then we also did a regional meeting in for Asia Pacific in Bangkok and also in Latin America, in San Jose, Costa Rica, with support from our colleagues, from our partner, Ilanut. Some of the interesting key findings, like this, that during the past decades, 15 years, we have seen positive changes where the provisions of the Bangkok rule was guided in terms of changes in prison law, regulations, and policy. Some country has used incorporate some of the provisions of the Bangkok rules into their domestic law. Some country use a Bangkok rule as a guideline to improve the prison conditions and prison design. We've seen increasing capacity building program being established, and also technical support also by UNODC, public awareness, and so on. The challenges that was found in almost all the meeting that we conduct was the overuse of incarcerations, the high number of women's populations make it difficult to implement the rest of the rule because of the prison overcrowding. And sometimes the Bangkok rule was only limited to the prison settings, but when going beyond the prison setting to the judiciary or prosecutors, police, and so on, the rule was quite unfamiliar for them. And there are many more challenges that you could scan the QR code and you would have the access to all the three reports that we did last year. Going forward, we have highlighted the key area, of course, using more non-custodial measures and also creating a partnership also with civil societies and partnership beyond just the criminal justice system. And also we highlight the need for more funding and to make sure that we have financial sustainabilities in the work that we do for the women's in prison. And finally, we talk about in several meetings, we highlight importance of having a lived experience individuals and to make sure that all the policy was centered around that, you know, the people who have the experience of imprisonment. I will just move forward to my last slide. So, just want to highlight some of the key themes involving women with lived experience has been one of the growing and recognizing this is approach going forward, that it's not just about policymaker talk about the issues that are important for women, but bringing women onto the stage, bringing women onto the panels and hear from their story, and then let them lead us when we change or adapt our policy. So I think there has been a growing recognition in many parts of the world. And one of the largest gathering that we did on in collaborations with ICPA was on Women's in Correction Conference organized earlier this year. A panel was so powerful. We have a women's with lived experience from many parts of the world. So she comes to share their story. And I feel that this is one of the moving panel that we managed to put together. And this year, Thailand table a resolution to celebrate the 15 years of the Bangkok Rules and 10 years of the Nelson Mandela Rules. Mm-hmm. One of the key calling, you know, moving forward is to make sure that when we talk about multi-stakeholder partnership, we make sure that we include people with lived experience.
That was Chondit Chirinara, Director of the Office for the Bangkok Rules and Treatment of Offenders at the Thailand Institute of Justice, speaking May 22nd at the launch of the 11th edition of Penal Reform International's flagship annual publication, Global Prison Trends 2025. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Prison Pipeline is a volunteer production for Community Radio, syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's AudioPort service. Please support your local community radio station. Become a member. Become a volunteer. Find this and other installments of Prison Pipeline on the web at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. You'll also find a link there to subscribe to the Prison Pipeline podcast. Prison Pipeline has a Facebook page. It's at facebook.com/prisonpipeline. Please give its page a like. Share it with friends. Join us again next week for another edition of Prison Pipeline. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long. Just a soul.